Hello, and welcome to episode 10 of Is It Funny? And this episode, I'm going to upend the the last nine, which have been focused entirely on men. Today, I'm going to talk about the 1939 film, The Women, because it's hilarious. If you haven't seen it, I hope by the end of this, you will be persuaded to do so, because it's such a complete joy. And a classic. And I'm going to avoid making this just, you know, Kate quotes her favorite lines from the film and instead talk about many other, you know, very important things about it, including the original play, which was written by Clare Booth Luce, whom you might know as a conservative politician. But originally, she was a supporter of Roosevelt and a critic of British imperialism in India, for example. And it was quite a revolutionary thing, this play that had, the play on Broadway had, I think, a cast of about 130 all women, which is, you know, quite wonderful. Imagine that happening now. It's very hard to do. So still a difficulty. And originally came about because she had overheard a conversation in what was referred to then as the powder room of a nightclub. And this conversation between women just sort of snowballed in her mind and put together a lot of different ideas and became this play that ran for, as the film says, 666 performances on Broadway. It was quite a success. And the film it also was a huge success, not nominated for any Academy Awards. Isn't that interesting? But enough of that. The film, the script was written by Anita Loos and Jane Murfitt. Now, Anita Loos, you probably have heard of, and no doubt I'm going to be doing an episode on her soon. Jane Murfitt is probably less well known, and this Michiganian, I have to, you know, shout out to the home state, is an early pioneer of film, an early film writer, but also that she created the scripts and sort of created the persona for Strongheart, her dog, who's the first canine star of the movies. And directed the film Flapper Wives. So quite a bit of work in early film. And their their task in large part was to make the play adhere to the production code for films, because there were a lot of things that were in the play that did not make it to the movie, because there are things that you cannot say in films. And I've got a wonderful 2005 copy of the DVD, which I've kept because there's a more recent and probably better one. But there's a photo on the back cover of the DVD that is from a totally different film. It has nothing to do with it. I don't know why. But it's well worth getting the DVD, especially this version that has a few extra special features that you might enjoy. The tagline on the movie is, "It's all about men," which in a way is true, and characterizes it as catty conversations between women, because of course, you know, all women are catty. This is not a play about women. This is a play about rich, idle women. And that's an important distinction to make. We see occasionally glimpses into the other world, and certainly a big part of the film is about somebody trying to enter that very protected world. But it's largely about women who have a lot of money, a lot of time, and very little to keep them busy. And some of them manage it better than others. And a lot of them give in to this sort of gossipy, carping life that is in the brilliant opening of the movie, which the opening sequence of the film is this wonderful sort of traveling, tracking shot through a salon. And we enter the salon with two women with little dogs fighting with each other. And then the woman complaining, of course, about, you know, those women who bring their dogs. Not mine. It's mummy's little playmate. And then we go through and sort of pick up on all these conversations happening and the women who are doing the work in the salon and complaining about the work, too, because they're putting up with these pampered, spoiled, terrible women. And we're hearing little bits of conversation and little bits of gossip and complaining and the kind of, you know, behind the scenes gossip that happens between these women, talking about each other, talking about their husbands. One woman saying, "Yeah, I still say I'm going to kill him." And then we finally come down to the wonderful Rosalind Russell, and we hear the story, the little nugget of news that is going to break everything open. And she's with the manicurist, played by Denny Moore, who's Olga. Moore is a wonderful comic character actor. And so she is spilling the beans about Mr. Stephen Haynes, who, of course, is the unseen center of this film, because Norma Shearer's character, Mary Haynes, is married to him and finds out that he's having an affair. I'm not been a huge fan of Norma Shearer, but I've come to like her more over the years. And in part, it's because the character of Mary Haynes has to be someone who's a little bit insipid, who makes this transformation into someone who, if not as cruel as a lot of her idle friends, at least manages to sort of grow a backbone and stand up for herself. Although, of course, the message of this film is rich, idle women should allow their husbands to have affairs because it's not really that important, which is the advice that Norma Shearer gets from her mother, Lucille Watt, played by Lucille Watson. That, you know, it's the only sacrifice you have to make. It's really not that bad. So if you can kind of ignore that message, the film is you know, very funny and witty and full of just absolutely fabulous performances. That would probably not include Virginia Wheatler, who plays her Mary Haynes' daughter, Little Mary, who's just, you know, child actors, especially in sort of golden age Hollywood, are often obnoxious. She's a little better in Philadelphia Story because part of her role is to play obnoxious, but she's, I don't know, it's a little difficult. And again, I don't think I mentioned, directed by George Cukor, who is the only real male presence I suppose we could see in the film or see the effects of the film. And George Cukor, of course, known as a women's director because he actually treated women like human beings and made films that had a lot of women protagonists. And so it was like, you know, and as a gay man, I'm sure he had a certain amount of sympathy with the way that Hollywood tended to treat anybody who wasn't, you know, a very macho male. All right. And so her friends, the friends that she joins up with. So we start in the salon and then we go see Mary Haynes' idyllic life in the country because, of course, being wealthy, they have a house in the country, probably on the island. And then they have their apartments in the city as well. And so her friends are coming over for lunch, and her friends include Phyllis Pova, who's one of the original cast members from the play, who plays the very phlegmatic Edith, who nonetheless loves her gossip with Rosalind Russell's character. And Joan Fontaine, who plays the very so almost ethereal, young in love, but her husband is not as wealthy as the others. So she's, you know, raised apparently with the others and comes from that kind of background, but she's married for love. And her husband is often very, what should I say, scathing about her friends. Rosalind Russell's character is especially harsh on Fontaine's Peggy as sort of not being entirely here and sort of hero-worshipping Mary, whom clearly Rosalind Russell's Sylvia is very jealous of the happiness that Mary has, which is pointed out to her a few times. And then there's Florence Nash, who plays Nancy Blake, the sort of coded lesbian writer. And there's a few good lines for her as a writer. As Rosalind Russell, Sylvia observes, you're not a very popular writer, not with you. And of course, Rosalind Russell, who, I mean, you just can't say enough of. And so, yeah, she'll probably end up being another episode. But Rosalind Russell, who's just comedy genius, everything from His Girl Friday to My Beloved Auntie Mame. She's so powerful. She's such a great delivery. She could do anything. And she's really, really good. And she's such a confident comedy performer. She's just, I can't say enough about her. And she gets to really go to town in this movie. She is probably the funniest part of it and really, really quite enjoyable and has some crazy fashion to wear, including the dress that is the bodice is like all eyes, which is, you know, hilarious as sort of showing women who will buy fashion, however outrageous it is. But it's also an indication of her gossipy nature, that she's always ready and looking for, you know, something to say about somebody else to put other people down. The great line, okay, I will quote a few, but a great line from her is like, oh, you know, about the unimportance of this gossip that she's helping to spread. Just think of all the terrible things they said about what's her name before she jumped out that window. See, I can't even remember her name. So, you know, who cares? It's not important. You know, obviously quoted a little bit wrong there, but this is an important part of it. And so Rosalind Russell's Sylvia maneuvers Mary Haynes into going in for a manicure, knowing that she'll see Olga. And Denny Moore is really good about at first going, putting on her, oh, I think it puts a girl on her mettle to, you know, have a recommendation. And then when she starts gossiping, she turns back to her normal voice. She's like, oh, my God, there's things that are going on. You know, and it's hilarious. And it's also, I mean, it ends up being really touching as you see sort of Mary Haynes realizing the story that she's spilling out to her is about her husband. And of course, Olga doesn't realize this. She's like, Jungle Red? You know, the famous nail polish that is one of the themes running through the film. She says, that's what all of, you know, Sylvia's friends come in for. And she says, well, I think I got what all of Sylvia's friends come in for. And she's like, oh, and I'll tell you, you came in. What's your name? Oh, Mrs. Haynes. Like, uh-oh. And, you know, feeling really bad about having blurted out this story. So then we move to, as the investigation goes on, because of course they want to find out, well, her friends anyway want to find out who it is that Stephen's having an affair with. And so they go and they see the shop girls, and the shop girls include Virginia Gray, who plays Pat, and Butterfly McQueen, who is trying to avoid working for Joan Crawford's Crystal and Crystal Allen. And Crystal, it's really interesting. A good choice of name. I mean, I think the wonderful part of it is Crystal. It's not a diamond, but it shines. And it's certainly enough to attract his attention. And as she's trying to get to Butterfly McQueen to go to her house and cook something, she's like, will I find anything in that refrigerator of yours? Because, you know, obviously, Crystal is someone who does not stay home and cook very much. She goes out as much as possible. Virginia Gray's Pat, who says, yeah, gin and cobwebs. So it's a very funny little sort of behind the scenes. And then, of course, Sylvia and Edith come in to try to, you know, do their detecting work and find out who Crystal is. And there's a wonderful scene where they're trying to play it cool and Crystal realizes what they're up to. And I'll have it set out tomorrow, Mrs. Prowler. That's Fowler. And so I'm trying to avoid the constant repetition of great lines. But there's so many. There are really just so many really good lines. And so we have all of these characters set up, and we have the meeting of Mary Haynes and Crystal Allen at the fashion show, where Crystal Haynes, see, I'm even joining their names up, where Crystal Allen has finally got her hooks into Mr. Haynes, and he's allowed her to open an account at this very expensive clothing store. The fashion show is great because it's in Technicolor. And so this black and white movie suddenly moves to Technicolor for the fashion show, and almost all of them horribly hideous late 30s fashions. Oh, the hats are some of the worst hats ever. There's this clear plastic one that's just terrible. The one beautiful dress is the one they actually put on Mary Haynes to try. But the great scene where they finally accidentally meet, where Mary has been pretending she doesn't know anything about it. Her mother's told her, don't confide in your friends or they'll break up your marriage, which of course is what does happen. And so they finally have this meeting, which is much mythologized, and especially once it gets into the papers, the headlines, and which is heard about as much more violent than it was. Oh, I heard she snatched the wig off that girl. And again, as we know how gossip goes in the tabloids. So after the encounter, of course, there is the argument, and we hear the staff, because of course she's a rich woman. So we don't hear the fight. We hear Norma Shearer giving a couple of lines, but then her maid and her cook talking down in the kitchen about, you know, what's happening and what's going to happen and how bad it is and how sad it is that this great couple is going to break up. And so, of course, what you do when you want a quickie divorce, you go off to Reno. And because it's 1939, you take the train, which is wonderful, of course. I was thinking yesterday of Dorothy Hughes' Dread Journey, which would also make a wonderful film, which is set on a train and is about the film world. And there's a loss from the kind of beautiful romantic vision of luxury train travel that we don't have anymore. Because I think even the most luxurious train travel is not very attractive. I've been on the overnight sleepers, and they're still it's nothing like the old days when there was a lot more of a real focus on luxury. Soon, Mary Haynes is on the train for Reno in this very sort of funny but sad sort of situation, because also Joan Fontaine's Peggy is there as well, and she's, you know, furious and heartbroken, and all of her romantic ideals about marriage have been broken. There's a great line. She's like, oh, she's so in despair. She's like, oh, if I hadn't been able to catch this train, I would have thrown myself under it, you know, which is completely absurd. And on the train, of course, they meet more characters, especially Mary Boleyn's Countess de Love. You know, here is an incredible, incredible character actor too, who has just some of the best lines, and it is, like Peggy, completely trusting in love, and she's been married about, what is it, five times, six times? And she's like, dare I risk another, when she meets her cowboy lover out in Reno. And of course, Paulette Goddard, who is just so good, and so funny and so sharp. And she and Mary form an unlikely friendship, and it's actually quite good. And she's sort of like the woman who's come up from the lower classes and who is now going to be marrying, guess who? Rosalind Russell's husband. And she tries to really talk to Mary Haynes and ask her about how she really feels. Is she going to be able to forgive her husband? Should she talk it over? Is she making a rash mistake just because this is what everybody else tells her she needs to do? And so they actually have a really good conversation. Of course, when they get to Reno, so they're staying at this sort of ranch that is run by the absolutely fabulous Marjorie Maine, who's hilarious and funny and very down to earth, again, in comparison to these high society women who get a little bit of pity from her. But she says, you know, most they feel sorry enough for themselves. They don't need my pity. And of course, this sets the scene for the great showdown as the information is revealed who it is that Paulette Goddard is there renovating herself for. And it turns out to be, of course, Rosalind Russell's husband. And they have one of the most famous, you know, girl fights ever. It's hilarious and very well staged too. Very enjoyable. I don't know why that should be so funny, but because in some ways it's such a cliche, but it's so nicely done. I can't tell you what a joy it is to just watch a movie that has only women in it, and it's still such a rarity, unless, you know, it's some kind of, you know, schmaltzy Hallmark kind of thing. Even that, I mean, they're always about romance. Oh, there is a lesbian romance coming to Hallmark, apparently. So finally a film with women, but I'm sure they'll be packed with lots of men who are there telling them what to do. So we have the girl fight, and we have the parting between Sylvia and Mary. So of course, Sylvia then goes over to the other side and becomes best friends with Joan Crawford's Crystal, and tries to cope with her lack of the husband that she always disparaged. And sort of we have these two camps set up. And then we find out, of course, through Virginia Wheeler, that Stephen Haynes is not happy with Crystal, regrets what he has done, but is too much of a man to say anything about it because he's married her and he's the kind of man who thinks that marriage is important, you know, not so important that he would allow his wife to divorce him because he had an affair with someone. But so this is what turns things around. And when she finally hears this, Mary Haynes decides that she has to, you know, go back and fight for him. And one of the weird things about this is that she's sharing the apartment now with her daughter, at her mother, Lucille Watson, who has the line that never fails to be jarring, where she said, oh, it's great to live alone. You can spread out like a swastika. And it's like, wow, 1939. So people, awareness of swastika, but not yet recognizing the horror that it represents. And it's like, oh, every time you just cringe when that line comes up. But then there's the final showdown as they all go to the casino roof. So the nightclub where everything is happening. Hedda Hopper is there as Dolly DePeyster, the maven of gossip who is getting ready to go. She says, you know, I've never seen such a clean joint. There's no gossip here. But there's a wonderful, wonderful scene, which, you know, I hardly want to spoil it for you because if you haven't seen this, oh my God, you really have to see this. But it takes place in the women's room, you know, one of these big, fancy women's rooms in this, you know, obviously opulent nightclub, and involves, again, payoffs because Sylvia has been not tipping the staff. So they're quite willing to lock her in a closet until they can maneuver other things to happen. And of course, we know this is Hollywood, so of course everything will turn out fine and Mary Haynes will be reunited with her husband there. I am spoiling the ending for you anyway. But the fabulous exit line. So the poor shop girl, Crystal, has to lose in the end because, of course, she's the usurper and not really in love with her husband so much as the nice accoutrements that he gives her as a wealthy man, including the most fabulous tub ever. Oh, my God, her bathroom, which Mary Haynes' daughter rightly calls, you know, ridiculous. But, oh, it's so fabulous to have that kind of bathroom. Now, that's opulence. That's luxury. But she gets the great exit line as she's slouching her way out of the ladies' room, telling them, you know, there's a name for you ladies, but it's not used in high society outside of a kennel. So go see the women. Enjoy it. If you've seen it before, see it again. Get some friends together. Go watch it. I think I might do that. Maybe I'll do that tonight. And if you haven't seen it, oh, you're welcome. See you next time.